You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Dan Cadman, who is now a senior fellow at an absolutely indispensable organization, the Center for Immigration Studies. He has been for decades now, some three of them, in fact, working in the space of immigration policy and practice as a member of the Immigration and Naturalization Services and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Organization, including as a senior supervisor and manager at their headquarters and in field offices, both domestically and abroad. Dan Cadman, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I'm interested in sort of at the outset getting an overview from your perspective as a seasoned professional in this business as to what the Obama legacy is likely to be with respect to immigration policy and practice, as well as the enforcement of the laws.
Well, it's like taking a finely tuned Swiss watch, peeling off the back and dismantling all of the cogs and wheels, and then exclaiming in dismay that everything is in disrepair and that the clock no longer works. It's a willful dismantling of the government's ability to enforce any portion of the immigration laws. It's astoundingly broad in scope, and I have to believe done with deliberation.
Systematic is the term that comes to my mind, and I think I call it a wrecking operation. It's true in other parts of the government. I guess you might also call it a fundamental transformation of America, as the president promised before his election. We're talking with Dan Cadman, a professional in the immigration space, about what the Obama administration has been doing to his profession and to the public safety and public interest as well. And Dan, you've written about a sort of collusion between an international body, the United Nations, specifically the UN Commissioner, High Commissioner on Refugee Affairs, and some of our federal agencies, the State Department, the Health and Human Services Department, specifically, I guess, with respect to undoing our immigration policies. Give us some examples of how this is working in practice.
Well, for instance, after the surge of unaccompanied minors and families on the southern border, which really embarrassed the administration, rather than shut down the border and promptly deport people, which would have been the most effective way of inhibiting further movement north, they simply shifted their focus south of the border and opened up a program called Central American Minors. And what they are doing is routinely processing individuals down there. And when they say minors, translate that loosely. That's people up to 20 years old. And even when those people don't meet the definition of refugee, and it's a very expansive definition that they're using, they're finding ways to parole them into the United States under the Immigration Parole Authority, which is an abuse. And they're bringing them in at government expense by the thousands. That's merely one example. Another example is the way, working with UNHCR, that the State Department has collaborated with HHS, as you said, and even with the Department of Homeland Security, to collapse this so-called exhaustive interview process for Syrians down to 3 months in order to make sure that they can shove as many Syrians into the country through the rest of this fiscal year as possible, to make sure that they have topped up their quotas, so to speak. And now UNHCR is calling for, quote, alternative pathways, and interpret that to mean they still want the U.S. and anyone else who's willing to do this to bring in as many people as possible, and if they don't qualify as refugees, to find different ways to bring them in, whether it's as students, as visitors, as so-called skilled or unskilled workers. What they're trying to do is empty the refugee camps, and there's a great deal of peril attached to that kind of enterprise.
Well, especially since, as we've heard from the top law enforcement officers, notably the FBI director, there's no way properly to vet these people to assure that we're not simply importing more jihadists. Let me ask you about that. We'll be talking more about it with Dinah West shortly. But there's something that you've called attention to, which is very worrying to, I think, the layperson, let alone people who have been working in these vineyards as you have, Dan Katman, namely this idea that there is a right to migrate. What's up with that? And where is that right formalized in any way?
Is it formalized in any international or even domestic statute? No. It's been adopted widely and in practice, however, by things such as the administration's abuse of prosecutorial discretion, which is to say abuse of discretion, by creation of any number of programs for which there is no statute to back it up, and which, functionally speaking, have opened the doors. And one of the evidences of this is that even though the administration is doing this Central American Miners Program, our southern border is still being surged by tens of thousands of individuals from Central America every month. And the Border Patrol estimates that this year will exceed all prior years by the time they're finished.
You mentioned in one of your recent pieces, Dan Katman, that the administration has shown itself to be very capable of using the sort of coercive power of the state to bend states and localities, notably, to its will. There are plenty of examples of this, but they have not used this power at all with respect to things like sanctuary cities. Very quickly, what is the practical effect of giving a pass to cities across the country who have categorized themselves as such? And what does it mean in practice?
In practice, what it means is that if the federal government isn't going to insist that state and local government law enforcement agencies comply with immigration detainers, then when alien felons are released from state prisons or even county jails, they're released back into the street, back into the community. And statistically, it's been shown that a shocking number of these individuals go on to commit further crimes. And a lot of them have been very, very violent crimes, including murder, assault on minors, sexual assault on minors. Some people have been maimed. It has resulted in literally hundreds of murders, assaults, thefts. And some number of these people are also border drug mules. And of course, what are they going to do when they're released? They're going to go right back to smuggling drugs.
This is of concern to me in the broader construct of this idea that we're going to have criminal justice reform. And it turns out among the people that will be sprung, apparently, are not just mules, but some kingpins in the drug trafficking business on the grounds that they're nonviolent drug offenders. Looking at it, again, from your perspective, Dan Katman, is that advisable?
Completely inadvisable. We have a perilous, porous border, and releasing people not only who were the foot soldiers, but the fellows in the middle and upper echelons is a virtual guarantee that the kind of violence and drug and weapons trafficking that we see on the border will continue unabated.
On the border and across it, inside the interior of the United States, increasingly, as you know so well. Dan Katman, I am very grateful to you for taking some time with us today, as well as for your service, both in the INS and ICE departments, and of course, now with the Center for Immigration Studies. I hope you'll return soon. Thank you very much for your work, sir. Next up, we'll be talking with Dinah West about this immigration business, Donald Trump, what's happening in the United Kingdom, and more. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.